everybody, and welcome back to Describe Your Kill.
Hello! You're not Craig.
No, I'm not. I have finally usurped my brother's throne as the rightful GM of this podcast. Craig is here. Unfortunately, yes, that is not put on. Let's just hear that again in full stereo.
Hello.
That is awful. I haven't heard you talk in about 2 weeks. That is awful. So, as you can hear, unfortunately, Craig is still recovering from some Victorian-level flu from the workhouse and has unfortunately still lost his voice. So the show must go on, unfortunately. But we are going to be talking through some of the big changes because at the end of last episode, we all leveled up. Congratulations, everybody. Level 13. Yay!
Just going back to Craig real quick, we've been trying to diagnose what it was for 2 weeks, but we all keep failing the medicine checks.
And good luck trying to get a cure. That's why he's still sick.
Yeah, none of us will pay the 200 gold.
No.
The NHS has gone to shib.
So, yeah, we're going to be talking through some of our level up today, and also a big change for us internally because we have finally moved over to the remaster fully. So we'd done bits and pieces on this a little bit in the run-up, but now we have fully committed to the big switchover. So everything on our Foundry system is now fully upgraded and switched over. All of our characters have been rebuilt, so we will be updating our character sheets with level 13 skills, spells, and feats, and that will be on the website, describeyourkill.com. If you nerds want to go and fact check us there and make sure that nobody's cheated and added, some level 13 armor or ridiculousness into that. But yes, so Craig, just give us a thumbs up though. Let us know how's it been? How are you holding up? It's a thumbs up and a thumbs down, which sounds about right. But I think we were just talking about it couldn't really be more unfortunate for anybody else to get this kind of sickness. Because, I mean, if it's one of us, then, you know, one of our characters can just go into a coma for a week or something and the show will go fully go on. But, I mean, without spoiling it for somebody to take over as GM, I mean, you have to kind of keep the ship afloat. So
Matt Mercer was busy.
Yeah. The scowl on Greg's face could not be communed.
Oh, look at that. Blue steel right there.
How's everybody else anyway? It's such peace and quiet.
It's wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah. I'll start. I'm top left on my screen anyway. Yes, I'm not so bad. I've been cycling in Mallorca for the last week, so nice and tanned.
Yeah, you are actually. Is that why you've got your lights turned off in your room at the minute?
Oh, because, yes.
To kind of hide the glow of your pallor.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, you can whistle. Yes, absolutely. It was glorious. 20 degrees, solid for three or four days.
Fabulous. Beautiful. What a treat. Jason, how are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, thank you. Yeah, all good here.
Good. Any news? Have you been a globetrotting at all?
I have not, no. Is
Milton Keynes?
Yeah, Chris has been to Menorca, I've been to the tropical paradise of Milton Keynes. No, I've managed to keep my globetrotting to a minimum the past few weeks.
Oh, well, good. You eco-warrior, you. And Kimon, we have to, of course, mark the occasion that you've just had a birthday. Happy birthday, Kimon. Unfortunately, you do not get your birthday hero point because it would be on today's session. But since we're not actually going to be playing, it does not roll over to the next session. Sorry about that.
You can re-roll any dice roll this session. Yeah.
Oh, that's very generous. Thank you.
Yeah, you doing okay, though?
Yeah, doing good. A bit hungover. I was on a separate other birthday yesterday, and I'm still recovering.
I was just going to say, it was your birthday last week. How are you hungover?
No, I was on a different birthday, but recovering and doing fairly good.
Good. Okay, so why don't we
how
just
How are
guess?
You, Matty? Asked around the room.
You're so polite. I'm also getting over the sickness, but unlike Craig, mine hasn't descended into whooping cough or whatever malady you're currently dealing with. But yeah, I'm getting over a terrible cold, and otherwise all good. Thank you very much. Yeah, all good. Okay, so before we get into talking about what level 13 looks like for everyone, let's talk about the remaster. We've touched on this a little bit in the weeks previous, but this is quite a big system overhaul, certainly for me when I was trying to rebuild Aeron, find all the different spells. There are quite a few new names and obviously a few rule changes to some of those spells, so it's been quite interesting going step by step for me. But let's dive into it. Let's talk about the remaster. The first thing that I've got on the list is alignment. Alignment is just gone for PF2E in the remaster, which for a system like this is such a huge departure. So, what's everybody's reaction to that? Because obviously the alignment system, good and evil and all of that, is such a fundamental part of the history of these games. What's everybody's reaction?
I think it gives a lot more sort of flexibility, doesn't it, as to how you want to play your character. It's not you're just a chaotic evil, or depending on whatever your character's mantra is, they can go either way. And I mean, obviously, Malachi, you know,
the most chaotic neutral of chaotic, neutral anyway. Characters.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Malachi's chaotic.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, there's some mechanical things there where it makes it a little bit more, not difficult, but isn't it now just holy and unholy? Is that the...
Yeah, there are holy and unholy traits. but I think the way that it works is that where an alignment system, you're kind of like resonating your alignment, aren't you? It's the way I've kind of always thought about it. You are that alignment. And I think that I kind of agree with you, Chris. It does add a bit more flexibility to character building. And also, I think just to enemies and world building in general. I think generally with mindless beasts and things like that, I mean, yeah, they're going to be neutral, but I think the concept of people being inherently good or evil, especially depending on like their species, just feels a little bit clunky and not very nuanced. So I really welcome it, to be honest.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. You know, is ultimately role playing in general has become a lot more mainstream, and it's telling better stories now than it's ever told. You know, the alignment grid, I'm going to show myself up now, but I'm pretty sure alignment was a thing in D&D, the original D&D. Yeah. So, you know, we are going back nearly 50 years now. It was of its time, but I think, you know, that there are better ways of getting those nuances across, you know, these days. So I'm in favour of moving it away. I think there are too many shades of grey. And I think as well, as much as anything, it's not a problem we have at this table, and, you know, is hopefully a problem that's going away. But it does, for some players as well, it removes that horrible thing of, well, that's what my character would do because they're evil, or because my character is good. Because ultimately, you know, good and evil things are, or good and evil are ultimately subjective.
And I think that's where the holy and the unholy system kind of ties in nicely with Divinity. And I think mechanically it doesn't have a huge impact on us as a party, as you said, Jason. Like, we don't have a cleric or a champion in the group, which it would have a kind of big impact on the mechanics, unless of course Kimon's taken another multi-class for Wilhelm for level 13, but I'm sure we're gonna find out about that. Okay, that's coming, is it? Yeah. Obviously, each Harrow card is tied to an alignment. I don't think that's really mechanically affected anything in play at all. I think it's just kind of flavor. And I think the way that it works for when you do a Harrow reading, you lay the cards out in a particular fashion, and that's usually against the alignment grid. Craig's nodding, so I think that's correct, isn't it? But... If that comes into play, because they haven't updated the Harrow system specifically as of yet, as of this recording, because I think it is only the first core books that are out at the moment. So if it does come up, then we'll obviously just retain use of that system, but I don't think that actually affects anything in any kind of meaningful way. So that's a good thing to kind of keep in mind. Holy and unholy is something you just mentioned, Chris. Yeah, so think the way that this works also is that most creatures will not be pledged to either side, so people can dip in to the holy and the unholy benefits. And again, I think that it's not locking people out of choices. I think as well, historically, alignment damage was a thing. I know that's been a thing for some characters where they've done good damage or evil damage. And I think that's all being put under one umbrella called spirit damage. Now, does anybody have any kind of effects that previously dipped into good damage or evil damage or anything like that?
I was saving up for a holy rune for my rapier for a while now, which does good damage, which historically has been pretty strong against devils. But yeah, that doesn't seem to... of course, it doesn't exist anymore. Mm. But... I'm sure there's some form of replacement for that as well.
Yeah, I think it will just come under the holy and the spirit damage. Yeah. I imagine that the same rules will apply, that good is strong against evil, holy was strong against certain holy, and vice versa.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's going to be the way it works.
So in addition to holy and unholy traits, positive and negative damage was the other big thing. And I think that this was largely changed due to removing the confusion element of positive and negative being mathematical terms. So positive and negative damage have been replaced now with vitality and void. So this is basically life and unlife, which I think is made it way clearer, because I know when we first started playing Pathfinder, this is something I got really confused at.
Yeah, definitely.
Particularly with undead creatures and negative damage and positive and all of that. It was, it was a little bit confusing.
And positive and good damage, which are sort of vaguely synonyms of each other. Yeah. And it was all very, very confusing. I think at least, the net number of types of damage is still the same. But I think it's a little bit clearer that these are very, very different things now, rather than being like, well, what's the difference between positive and good damage? Because it feels very, very similar.
For me, this has clarified it incredibly. Like, just on paper, reading it through, it just makes so much more sense. So I'm really pleased they've made that change, to be honest.
There's nothing worse, though, was there? Like, you've got you're dealing out positive damage, but the target was, like...
I think that's when you were hoping for that bonus, weren't you? And then when it kind of didn't do anything, it was, again, a little bit
frustrating. Yeah, when you've got like an undead creature and it takes additional damage from positive damage, but doesn't take additional damage from good damage. It's like, well, what?
Except when it does. And then
except when it does, yes.
That's always been really confusing.
So there's a lot of name changes that have happened across the remaster, and a big one at the core for our base stats, which were previously known as ability scores, are now known as attributes. Again, I don't think this affects anything mathematically, but this is one of those changes to get it away from, is it the OGL? Is this one of those kind of big changes to kind of separate Pathfinder out? So again, not a biggie, but most monsters were doing this anyway, but now it's just being rolled into the PC stats. Now, when we're talking about classes specifically, obviously the first player core one is out so far. And this means that only the Bard and the Fighter have been remastered that affects our party, at least. So Sorcerer and Thaumaturge are still yet to be looked at. I mean, Thaumaturge, I'm not even sure will change all that much, because it was obviously such a recent class.
I was going to say, I would fully expect that will, if they didn't write that with, the upcoming changes in mind, then they've dropped a bollock, to be completely honest, because say it was so close to it being. So I'd be really surprised if anything significant changes there. Probably just more, maybe rewording.
Kimon, have you noticed any massive remaster changes for you as a fighter, just from having your kind of overview?
Honestly, except for a few renamings of abilities and feats, not really. There's a few new feats which look really cool, but none that really fit into Wilhelm's build, so sadly I might not have a lot of changes for Wilhelm overall.
Did any of the text for your feats change besides the names? Like, did you get any kind of obvious buffs or debuffs?
Yeah, no, sadly not. Would have been cool, though.
They said he was strong enough already. He doesn't need anything.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, fighters weren't really struggling in the first place, so...
Yeah, fair enough.
Chris,
what about you? What does an overview of your new remastered Bard look like? Any big changes, or is it, again, a bit like Kimon's new names, maybe a few tweaks?
Nothing much. Obviously, Courageous Anthem, we've been through this before, but Courageous Anthem, which was Inspire Courage, that's just a name change for all intents and purposes. From what I've read, most of the other stuff doesn't really hit Malachi, and he's just...
Still as potent as ever.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Fabulous.
What about Aeron, Matty? Because obviously there's been a lot of renamed spells, but they've obviously... One of the other really big changes is that they've gotten rid of Schools of Magic altogether.
So, yeah, I think it has a lot to do just around the flavor of how spells and magic are categorized. But when you already have the spell lists, I think that adding those extra schools and things like that was getting maybe a little bit confusing and convoluted. Whereas the spell lists, as far as I'm aware, are still the same as they were. So certain spellcasters can cast certain types of magic. Some of those spells overlap, some don't. And that's where you get a bit of variety and flavor.
Yeah, it was definitely a thing. The game we ran immediately prior to Stolen Fate, we played Knight of the Grey Death, and I played a wizard.
That would have been big, yeah.
Yeah, that would have been a huge change. I say it would have been a huge change. Mary was actually, she was a generalist. So it didn't make a huge difference. But if I'd picked like a transmutation wizard or an evocation wizard, I'll be honest, I haven't read into it enough to know how significantly it would change, but it feels like that would be quite a significant change.
You're absolutely right, and I really appreciate that further clarification, because obviously I'm only thinking about it in reference to Aeron and the sorcerer, and yeah, you're absolutely right. So the Schools of Magic is certainly bigger for the wizards. So a big change on the skill list is around athletics, and actually, Kimon, I think that even if you haven't had a lot of changes to the fighter class, this one probably is relevant for Wilhelm, who does quite a lot on the athletic side with grappling, repositioning. So, Kimon, I don't know if you want to maybe take this and talk us through a little bit around the changes to the athletic skill and the upgrade it's had.
Sure, yeah. Athletics seems to be overall buffed, which I am very happy about. Sadly, Wilhelm is not the most strength-based athletic character, but as someone who, as Jason touched on earlier, when we played Knight of the Grey Death, I obviously played a grappling-based barbarian. All I can say is I wish these changes happened earlier.
Craig is very glad that they didn't.
Yeah, there's a lot of really cool stuff here. So basically, any actions like grapple that need a free hand, so also, disarm, and the new action, what's it called? Reposition, which allows you to move a creature within your reach. They all now have the agile trait, which means that the multiple attack penalty doesn't affect them as much. Yeah, overall, I think it's just a cool improvement, quality of life thing. But sadly, not that much for Wilhelm, as he grapples automatically without rolling. But what's really cool is the new disarm buff, which finally makes it playable.
Yes.
And finally makes it a usable skill. In case you didn't know, before the remaster, when you disarmed an enemy, they had a -2 to their attack rolls with the weapon that you tried to disarm until the start of their next turn. Yes. So basically, nothing. And now it is, if I remember correctly, it is until the end of their next turn or until they spend an action to regrip their weapon, whichever comes first. So it now has a real use, and it now might even be... preferred tool for Wilhelm. We'll see. And of course, another big one is the swap action, where you can now stow away a weapon and draw a new one for one action.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be for Lupin in particular. That's going to be a lot more use.
might come
to be
in
fair, handy. I think that was one we'd kind of grandfathered in a little bit early anyway. And again, that feels very much like a sort of a common sense one. In so far, that should always have been the case.
Good quality of life change, I think, just because losing those actions. And I think specifically, we maybe don't have so much of this problem because we're playing at higher level. But how many times have we played level one characters where those actions really do make a big difference? And the multiple attack penalty as well means that as a level one, you do just spend a lot of your actions moving and striking, and it doesn't make for the most interesting use of actions that you have available to you. Now with that buff, I think I'm quite excited to, when we eventually do start anything in the future at a level lower level, it'll be really interesting to see how that plays out.
I think, it's about giving players interesting options. And I think it's already difficult enough to justify using different weapons as a player, especially once you start to get towards higher levels, because ultimately you're investing a lot of gold in this particular weapon because it's got to have +2 rune, it's got to have, you know, general striking, greater striking runes, things like that. So you're investing all this stuff in them. And you don't have to do that. You're not having to, you know, is if you we've had it ourselves, you know, we found that +2 club, Blackwood club, or Darkwood club, should I say. And, you know, hey, that would have been a really great, you know, really great weapon, but actually that particular one none of us could really have used. But is, you know, finding weapons and being able to take it with you rather than just going, scrap it, is great. You know, it's about having options. We laugh about one of Chris's old characters, Mo Exotic, being a walking armory. But you can now do that. Let's have multiple weapons, and you can start to, you know, hey, guess what? This enemy's immune to piercing damage. Well, that's fine. I've got a massive fuck-off club here.
Yeah, definitely. I like that a lot. And I think just to build on the swap skill as well, it also means that you're not leaving your weapons just littered around the battlefield, which, if you did ever want to make a swap, you're kind of forced to take that drop action, which again just felt so punishing, especially if you have an intelligent NPC that you're up against in combat who then can just pick up your weapon off the ground. I don't know, it just felt a little bit punishing. So again, I think it's a really welcome change across all of those things with athletics and interact.
Yeah.
Have any of you before this change had the absolutely miserable experience of playing a dual wielding character trying to drink a potion?
Yeah, my character in Knight of the Grey Death was a dual wielding, and I was trying to navigate poisons as well as part of his build, and so it was really difficult to do anything with the three actions you've got, trying to juggle drawing potions and all of that. So yeah, tricky. Another big change that I've noticed for spells, particularly on Aeron's list, is the new subtle trait. So since spell components are no longer a thing, certain spells such as message and invisibility now have this new trait, and it basically makes them easier to cast secretly. And this is really interesting because I think it got pulled up when we were talking about the Sedisarax fight, because technically, rules as written, there's no way to subtly cast, you know, unless there's certain feats or things like that. Craig allowed us to have a stealth check when we appeared in the cave in the second Sedisarax fight, and allowed Aeron to basically cast stealthily. So I had to roll checks for it, but rules as written, that wasn't really a thing. So this stealth trait, or this subtle trait for spells, I think is, again, a really welcome thing that just plays into the flavor of the game. And
if I remember correctly, and I reserve the right to be wrong on this one, but I think there was a skill feat that could do it. I seem to remember I had to do a little bit of retraining with a character to get that because it was something I wanted to do. And I think, again, it just feels like a net positive is that you're not having to use up. A character only gets a certain amount of feats, and I think you're not having to use up those valuable resources to be able to do something. Like I say, if you're casting invisibility, it kind of goes without saying that you don't want to draw attention to yourself doing it. It's just little common sense quality of life things. It's the same with charm. You know, charm is the same. You don't really want to if you're trying to very subtly, you know, get these words out without someone noticing, you suddenly start chanting in the middle of it. So which don't mind him, he's just not very well.
Can I just say that none of Malachi's spells are have that feat at all. That's how I've got subtle.
I think even if they subtle. Did, we would full flavor have to remove them. Yeah, no, that it's a really welcome change. I think it plays into kind of how we naturally want to play the game as well. And yeah, really excited about it. Focus spells are also far more flexible.
Yeah.
So the way I will have a very, very belated confession to make, and it's not related to anything we've done on this campaign, but when we first started playing together, Extinction Curse, my spellcaster character, Midna, this was fully how I played it. So I didn't realize that was the rule around recovering focus points. Yeah. So I was just refocusing and spending half an hour refocusing to gain all my points back.
Such a cheater.
However, I have fully played by the rules for Aeron, and since we've been broadcasting, you can check the tapes, and I will attest to that.
That's made even worse by the fact that I was playing a key monk who had focus spells and was doing it a different way, and neither of us noticed.
Yeah. So this, essentially... I was just ahead of the curve. I was playing the game the way that it was meant to be played.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was ahead of the remaster. So
got on the phone to Jason Bullman. Yeah, oi, Jason.
Yeah,
fix
Jason,
it.
Jason, come on. Yeah. So again, this I think is really good, particularly when focus spells can play into for sorcerers, particularly. They make up quite a big part of their lore and their build with the bloodline spells. So Aeron, being of the Harrow bloodline, those spells that I've got previously, I've been quite conservative with them, because knowing as well, I've only got those 3 points for the day. I've got 3 of those spells, and I've really wanted to cast them more, especially, do you remember the one where I draw a random Harrow card and it has a boon or a bane effect depending on who the target is? I've only been able to do that really a couple of times because, again, just knowing the economy of the focus points, I've just wanted to be a bit careful about it. So now I'm free.
It's great. It's the third time I said it. It is a great quality of life one for the player, and particularly for magic users, it's great to have one less thing to try and keep track of. It's enough of a pain trying to, you know, right, I've got this many spell slots I've got to, because you start a day and you don't know whether you're going to have 10 fights, and you don't know if you're going to have a fight at all. And you know, it is when you've got these spell slots, a limited resource that you use whether it succeeds or not, that's really, really difficult to judge sometimes. So is knowing that you've got these focus, that even if the arse drops out of everything, you're going to be able to cast 3 spells every combat, which 9 times out of 10 is probably going to be enough.
Yeah,
that's
definitely.
That's great. So I think, again, that really, and particularly for lower level characters, lower level spell casters, is a miserable experience for any player. It's, and that's not a Pathfinder thing. It just seems to be the case with all TTRPGs. Playing a low level spellcaster is just all right. I'm going to spend the first 6 weeks of this game just hiding in the corner, trying not to get turned into a thin paste.
Yeah, and just try to keep them alive so you can level them up.
Exactly. Yeah, it's. I get 2 spells a week. And one of those will inevitably fail, and the other one will be buffing the fighter. So it's just one of those things. And I think, he's giving, again, in the feel of giving players more good options is never a bad thing.
No, I agree. And then finally, on the list of our remaster changes, recall knowledge has been cleaned up. Now, Jason, I'm going to go straight to you for this as our resident recall knowledge expert, since this is a huge part of Lupin's build, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a huge part of Lupin's build, and without wanting to talk too much about something that's gone before and that the listeners won't have heard, it was a huge part of the last build I had as well, which was built entirely around a recall knowledge feat chain that the wizard has. And it was, I'm not going to say a bone of contention between me and Craig, but there were definitely a few times where I was like, I want to do this thing. And Craig as the GM's go, well, my interpretation of it is slightly different. And having it now written into the rules, which is, right, before you even use the fit, and we kind of arrived at this happy medium anyway, but he's having written in the rules is you pre-agree the question that you're going to ask, and then you go, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and spend the action, or no, do you know what? I don't feel like that's giving me value for the action. I'm just going to go do something else. That's so useful. And I think as well, I believe it stacks with dubious knowledge, which is a feat that Lupin has. And I think that's really, really, again, it removes uncertainty. You know, everyone knows what they're doing. The player knows when they're getting value for their actions. And I think because the maths in Pathfinder is so tight for the most part, every action counts. And I think, you know, in big fights, there is nothing worse than as a player is like, right, okay, I'm rolling really badly, so I want to do something that isn't going to run on a roll. How can I spend this action in a better way? I can do this thing, and then to, you know, feel like you've wasted that because you either didn't ask the right question or the GM thought you were maybe trying to overreach and has sort of pulled it back a bit. I think that's a really, really good thing. So I'm big thumbs up for me on that.
Great. Okay, thanks, boys, for going through the list and just clearing up the essential changes on the remaster. But I do want to get into the weeds now and talk a little bit more about the specifics of our characters and just go through the evolutions, really, of how the remaster has affected each of us individually and just puts all of the listening audience on the same page. So can we kick off with you, Kimon, and Wilhelm, the fighter, rogue? What other multiclasses have you got going on? Can we get it on the record, please?
By now, it's only fighter and rogue.
Okay, I was correct. Fabulous.
The wizard dip is next week.
So tell us a little bit about how the remaster has affected Wilhelm. What are the big changes you've noticed?
So like I said, there's not a lot going on for fighters, but there is a lot going on for tieflings. Or should I say Nephilim?
Nephilim.
Which is the new term. It's kind of a mishmash of the old Tiefling and the old Asimar.
Yep.
Both of which no longer exist. But a Nephilim is this kind of umbrella term where then with your ancestry feats you can specify whether your heritage is angelic, demonic, diabolic. All of that is kind of put into that one heritage, which sadly in Wilhelm's case means that there were few feats that were lost in the in the transition. But overall, it's almost the same thing. One feat that Wilhelm lost, though, which, I mean, if it had to be one, it's good that it's this one because it never came up. Is I think it was called Devilish Wilds or something, which lets him cast Charm once per day. But as I said, it never came up. So now he has an actual Fiendish Law, which works the way we thought it did at the beginning. So yeah, now he has Nephilim Law. Which
this is
him,
just a homebrew feat that you've written, right?
Yeah, I scribbled that in with a pencil. And it says basically you get the additional law feat for a law skill that kind of connects with your heritage and your basically your home plane, quote unquote, you know. And so in Wilhelm's case, it would be Hell Law or Hellish Law, the thing where not demons but devils come from, and he also has assurance in that feat now. So
nice.
Yes, now Craig can prepare to hear me ask for my Hellish Law more. I can see his face lighting up when I say that. Yeah, and
if he could scream, he would.
Yes, but other than that. Of course, renamings. The devil's language is now called Diabolic instead of Inferno.
So it's and, Clive the Diabolic Donkey.
Yes.
That's even better.
Oh, we have a clarification from the floor. Please hold.
Oh, no.
The Chthonian Donkey. So
no! Chthonian is the new Abyssal and Diabolic is the new Inferno.
Clive the Chthonian donkey.
I mean, Clive is a diabolic elephant. Claude, no. Wait, Claude's Clive the was the donkey. Clive's yeah, the fuck. Donkey. Sure, yeah, okay.
Chthonian Clive, yeah, I like it.
Chthonian Clive.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, sounds like a Scottish football team.
Chris, can we go to you and let's talk through Malachi? Any big changes you want to signpost?
If I was to be a more martial bard, there is, I think, a few changes to that that makes it a little bit easier to be a martial type bard if I was getting into melee. But I'm more spellcasting, more will, still sonic. Nothing of that has really changed. So nothing really more to add for Malachi.
Okay, pretty clean and simple then for Malachi. Jason, what about Lupin? What are the big changes you've noticed, if any?
There really is, in all honesty, is certainly from a class point of view, as we touched on earlier, as the Thaumaturge is pretty much untouched, and, you know, barring any further significant deviations, I think is probably going to remain relatively untouched. So there's nothing sort of major in the Thaumaturge class. I think some of the stuff around it, like, you know, swap, which we've kind of been using already, is useful for Lupin, but is the reality of it is I've got kind of lucky, to be honest, is that the remaster hasn't really changed all that much for Lupin.
Great, thank you very much, Jason. So for Aeron, the big changes that I've noticed have been around the spells specifically, because as I said, Sorcerer hasn't yet been remastered, but the spells across the core have, and not just the names, although there are quite a lot of name changes, but also some of the effects and the structures. And I think that from what I can see so far, these are really positive changes in my mind. It's grouping and simplifying quite a lot of concepts in magic. One of the spells that I actually haven't had a chance to use yet, thankfully, was Remove Paralysis, which I have at second level, although all of the spell levels are now called ranks, so at second rank. And that has been changed in the remaster to a spell called Sure Footing. And rather than just working on paralysis, this now works on conditions including clumsy, grabbed, or paralyzed. And so it's a lot more effective in the way that they're grouping these kind of spells that are supposed to help with conditions removal, sicknesses, and diseases. Prior to the remaster, there were a lot of individual spells for just single conditions. Remove curse, remove disease, remove paralysis. So instead, they've condensed quite a number of the spells, and I think it's a really welcome change, in my opinion.
Yeah, it definitely is. As a habitual cleric player, is I think Lupin, we've played about four or five different adventure paths now, and Lupin is the first character I've played that doesn't have a cleric dip of some description.
It's not too late.
When we need it the most, as I know, well.
That's what I was waiting for you lot to fucking step up.
It's fine. It works.
I think that was definitely a huge frustration of mine, because clerics are prepared casters. And it's really, really difficult as a cleric player to be like, well, I can have something for remove paralysis, or I can have something for remove curse.
Yeah.
But I only have, you know, X number of spells per day, and I can either prepare a bunch of spells that I'm 80% sure I'm never going to use, but on the 20% it does come up, it's going to completely screw over the party for the rest of the day. And it's really, really difficult. I think that's a big... That's a big improvement, is giving players more options to do. I think the cleric does have a feat that can do that, but again, we're in the territory of you sort of spending quite a high level feat. I think it's like a level 8 feat, and it's Channel Sucker, I think. But it is basically, it lets the cleric cast that, and I think, yeah, having that where you've not got to prepare, oh, well, if we get paralyzed, I need to prepare this, and if we get, I need to prepare this, and the argument is, hey, well, you can have scrolls or wands for this stuff. Scrolls aren't cheap. you know, as we have found out several times on this adventure path already, they're not cheap things to have. And yes, Lupin can prepare some, but annoyingly, they're inevitably sort of slightly too low level for the things we're going to need. So, yeah, I'm definitely a big believer in using these things to make players' lives easier and make things like diseases less of a game breaker when they come up, because again, as we've seen, they can be showstoppers in a game where maths is so tight and a plus one or a minus one can be huge.
Yeah, I just want to point out the text in the new spell Cleanse Affliction, which is the combination of remove curse or remove disease, and this single spell, rather than taking 10 minutes to cast, it's a two action spell, and it works on a target that has curse, disease, or a poison. And if that status has advanced past stage one, then you automatically reduce it by one stage, no counteract check.
Oh, that's so good.
That's powerful.
Yeah, so you don't get rid of it, but you get to reduce it if it has advanced to a certain point, and then higher levels of the spell work in the usual process of counteract check to actually try and remove the disease or poison. So it's not a gimme, but it is such a big, big boon, I think.
Yeah.
Aeron doesn't have that spell, unfortunately, but I do have a scroll. I did have a scroll of Remove Curse, which has now become a scroll of Cleanse Affliction, which is handy. Super, super handy.
Lupin will be grabbing a few of those at the next shop as well. That's great now, because that's suddenly, you know, rather than having to buy three scrolls at, you know, however much they cost, it's now just one scroll.
Lupin can make them each day anyway, can't he?
It can, but only up to level 3. So it is, with the current feats, and that one I think is only a level 2 at its base. But yeah. is now you don't have the counteract check. Hey, that's fantastic. But is you have the problem of if you're trying to counteract at this level where we're playing, is like level 6, level 7 spells and things. Sorry, rank 6, rank 7 spells and things. And you're trying to counteract that with a rank 2. Yeah, you're wasting spells at that point.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it was a bit of a risk for when I built Aeron originally, and I had removed Paralysis in my spell list, and putting it in there, it just felt like, oh, like of all the things I could got to pick, I know we've just had such a nightmare of Paralysis before. And so I just thought I don't want to be in that situation. So the fact that Surefooting replaces that and is a bit more versatile is really encouraging. And also similarly, if we do have scrolls, it just makes things a little bit more versatile. Across Aeron's spell list, there are a few name changes. So True Strike is now Sure Strike. There's True Seeing is now True Sight. So again, these are just small name changes rather than anything mechanical. One of the big ones that has affected Aeron is his staff. So in the remaster, previously, I think it was the Staff of Enchantment was what I had. And now it is called the Staff of Control. Obviously, this comes from the closing of the magic schools. Close the schools.
the conservatories of Galarian too.
Yeah. So the Staff of Control, which for all intents and purposes is the same staff. However, one of the spells is different. So the third rank spell was Paralyze, and it has been replaced with Enthrall. And also Laughing Hideous Laughter. So this is one of yours, Chris, as well. It's called Laughing Fit. And Touch of Idiocy was also one of the spells in my stuff, which I don't think I've used to date, but it has been remastered as Stupefy, and it's had a buff. So previously, if the person who you're casting this on passed the save, then nothing happened. And now if they pass it, they still get Stupefied 1, which is a really big boon, because Stupefied, especially against spellcasters, is a really useful status to give them. So yeah, keen to get a bit more active with that. Is there anything I've missed?
One very minor one is that half elves have been renamed, and they are now, I don't entirely know how to pronounce it, Avarian. Not Avarian, that's birds.
Birdie.
is Lupin is not a Tengu.
You're Tengu now. Half Tengu.
Iuvarian. Iuvarian.
However you say it now, Jason, locks it in the canon of this podcast. Absolutely. And we can never say it differently.
Yeah, Stoic. Yeah.
Stoic. The Stoic Iuvarian.
Yeah.
Excellent. Cool. Okay, well, that's really interesting. Thank you guys for all of that. But now we want to get on to the juicy stuff. Level 13, How's everybody feeling? As you said, Jason, at the start of this, it's not the biggest level for all of us, but it is still a level up. So yep. Let's celebrate it and let's go around the table. Let's talk about what level 13 party characters looks like. Jason, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, I'll kick off. Yeah, so level 13, again, level up, never a bad thing. And, you know, we've been level 12 for quite a long time, to be fair. It's been a long old run to this. No major changes for Lupin. The main one is, like everyone else, he'll get a new ancestry feat. And for Lupin, I've taken not a ton of great options for either human or half-elf at level 13. But I did decide to eventually go for advanced general training, which gives me basically another general feat of up to level 7, which now allows me to finally get prescient consumable, which is not only useful for the party, but also I think sort of fits Lupin's character quite well. So reading sort of from the text is you can predict which consumables you might need in advance. When using Prescient Planner, and just to read everyone in, Prescient Planner basically means you can effectively, you're in a shop everywhere. You can literally just go, you can essentially call an audible and go, oh yeah, no, I bought this thing back in town and I've just got it now. And so you take the gold out of your pack and you produce the item. Prescient Planner, it's limited to... is limited to just common items, so it can't be potions, things like that. We used it, I believe, when Lupin produced a set of healer's tools after deciding, you know, for three episodes that between us we had none. However, Prescient Consumable actually removes that caveat. I now can procure consumable items for my backpack instead of an adventuring gear, so it can be any common consumable with a level no higher than half my level. So as I can go up to... I always forget, does Pathfinder round up or down for the odd? Down. I think it rounds up.
Down.
I can basically produce up to any level 6 consumable at any point, and its bulk must be low enough that carrying it wouldn't have made encumbered. Now, I presume the spacious pouch would probably remove that last caveat. But, so that's going to be very, very useful in terms of, hey, we need... Hopefully, again, bearing in mind what we were just talking about, it'll be less of a thing. But hey, we need access to this specific spell or this specific potion because someone's got a relatively rare disease. We now don't have to go back to town. Is Lupin can just go, oh, yeah, no, I bought one of those 3 weeks ago and here it is.
Yep. And Craig has just reminded you in the chat that if you want to do that in combat, that is two actions to pull it out of your backpack.
Yes.
Is that common items, Jason?
Yeah. Yes, just common items. Yeah. But that's, you know, that's tremendously useful just in a whole bunch of scenarios. You know, is even something as simple as, hey, this combat's not going well. Malachi's reminded us halfway through the combat he only had a level 1 soothe left. And we've suddenly got, okay, right, that's fine. Is guess what? Lupin bought some healing potions back in town and here they are.
Perfect.
Is that once a day or unlimited?
No, unlimited. We can do it as often as I like. As long as I've got actions to spend doing it, then we can do it. So that's the main one. Very minor one is Lupin also gets greater resolve. So his proficiency rank for will saves increases to legendary. So that's a nice one as well. When he rolls a crit failure on a will save, he gets a failure. And when he rolls a failure, he takes half damage. So basically now Lupin... pretty much just either succeeds or fails on his checks. There is no critical failure state for Lupin on will saves. Craig does not look happy with that.
Very nice. Thank you, Jason. Okay, Chris, do you want to tell us a little bit about level 13 Malachi Bordello?
My class features at level 13, not as game-breaking as Jason's light armor expertise. I've learned how to dodge while wielding light or no armor. And my proficiency ranks for light armor and unarmed defense increase to expert. So that plus 3. That plus 3 armor.
There we go.
No, don't need it anymore. I can wear it now. Yes. I get an ancestry feat and Malachi took bounce back. So it's going to make it even harder for Craig to kill me. And once per day, when I lose the dying condition, I recover from near-death experiences with astounding resilience. I don't increase the value of my wounded condition due to losing the dying condition.
Very nice.
And it's about, oh, and obviously it's level 7 spells.
Yes. Which,
do we want to go into that, or shall I just leave it as a surprise?
I'm gonna go into it.
So okay, fine. Well, I've taken prismatic spray.
Oh, I don't like the sound of that.
That's
Malachi's prismatic spray.
That's a very Malachi spell to pick.
Well, I just thought like he'd quite.
Where's he? I was going to say, where's he spraying it from?
It's keto, obviously. It's well, like obviously. You know, he likes to be flamboyant and make an entrance, and that's the kind of thing that I was thinking there. A spray of rainbow light beams cascades from your open hand. Each creature in the area must roll 1d8 on the table below to see what beam affects it. We've got red, which is fire, orange is acid, yellow electricity. So it's kind of linked into the Rod of Wonder in a way. You don't quite know what you'll get.
I like spells like that.
Yeah, it keeps it interesting.
Oh, great. So the target has a different save depending on what colour the spray is.
Absolutely. Malachi has also taken shock to the system. A dense lightning cloud descends to fill the target's space, then fires a jolt of revitalising lightning into the target. The target is a corpse that died within the last round. The creature comes back to life with 0 hit points.
What?
Any effects and condition it had when it died, with the exception of dying, and its wounded condition increases by 1. The creature's initiative is right before yours. Mm. And regardless of whether the creature came back to life or was already alive, it regains 8d8 hit points.
Craig is looking at the screen so closely, he's become nothing but a forehead. He's like, what? This can't be correct.
And the bolt wakes it up if it was unconscious. For the duration of the spell, the target is supercharged, it becomes quickened, and can use the extra action to stand, stride, strike, or fly if it's got a fly speed. In addition, it can cast 5th rank Thunderstrike as an innate spell at will, using my spell DC, which happens to be 32. The cloud that covered the creature remains until the end of the target's next turn. Any creature in the cloud is hidden, and anything outside the cloud is hidden to any creature that's inside.
That's an interesting combination. Halfway through when you were reading that out, I was thinking, that sounds like just a really bad heal spell. And then you were like, oh yeah, no, and it also turns them super cyan. It's like, okay, yeah, now that's a bit more interesting. Yeah.
So you become Dr. Frankenstein.
Essentially, yeah.
I can't believe that's a real spell.
I know. And I think with the death of my mum, Malachi's mum, I should say.
I was like going to say.
Those kinds of things, you know, that I think it kind of plays into that a little bit.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Chris. And I'm sure a prismatic spray will really mark the occasion of Karen's funeral as well. So thank you very much.
It's all black.
Unfortunately, that's not on the table, I don't think. Let me just check. No, it's not there. Violet or blue, maybe.
Oh, maybe a dark enough blue.
Blue is petrify.
Okay.
Come on, tell us about level 13 Wilhelm.
Yes, but before I do that, I do feel obligated to mention that I've just found out that the cape of Brokeback Mountain is now called the Charlatan's Cape. It was renamed. Paizo was not fine with us saying
the
way
cape
it is.
Of the Mountbank is now...
That's now... I just said it, but I forgot now.
Charlatan's Cape.
Yes, Charlatan's Cape. Thank you.
Oh. Yeah.
Remind me to put that into my inventory because I've got that, haven't I?
We might need to homebrew that name. I'm not satisfied
I'm
with
sure
that change.
I'm sure that would be a fine holdover.
Yes, but level 13 for Wilhelm. Of course, the thing all of us love about fighters, he is now better at fighting than anyone will ever be because he... From level 13 on, is a legend at attacks with swords. He now has a plus 28 to hit with his rapier.
If you could see, Craig looks like Beaker from the Muppets, you know, when he looks sad.
So that's fun, totally, for everyone at the table, not just me.
Yeah.
And other than that, there's not a lot going on, honestly. Of course, a skill increase. So Wilhelm might be able to sneak now. And an ancestry feat, which for him is also a new Nephilim feat, which is basically just a renaming of an old tiefling feat, Slip Sideways, which basically gives him the translocate spell at fifth rank once per day.
Nice.
So, yeah, we can now expect some teleportation action up to 1 mile from Wilhelm as well.
I've just realized that now means that to varying degrees, all four of the party have teleportation abilities.
Yes. That is exactly why I wanted you to have the halfling backpack thing, because now everything is translocatable.
Yep. Fabulous.
Yes, but that's about it. So, yeah, like Jason said, for a marshal, level 13 is basically just the halfway point to level 14.
Yeah, I can hit things slightly harder than I could yesterday.
Yes.
Nice. Legend, though. What a treat.
What a legend.
What a legend. Well, for Aeron Spoke Point, level 13 is relatively exciting as well. So I have got defensive robes now, which takes me to expert level for my unarmored defense, my magical defensive robes.
Your AC is now a dizzying 25.
I will have you know, my AC is a wonderful 32. And I'm very pleased with that. Yes, I also get weapon specialization, which for me, obviously, not really. I don't think Aeron's ever held a weapon in his hands in his entire life.
Like a triumph of Wilhelm.
Yeah. Oh, a legendary weapon. I also got a skill increase, and Aeron is now an expert in medicine, so he has been practicing his suturing techniques after getting very rudely abused by that horrible man, Arashish was his name. He was very critical of Aeron's healing abilities, so he has taken it upon himself to do a bit of training and studying. But more importantly, Aeron also gets 7th rank spells, and I can currently cast 3 out of them. And one of them comes from my bloodline, and I am going to talk about it now, mainly because if I don't, I know I'm going to be in big trouble, because it is yet another lovely spell that allows me to grind something to a halt. It's called... However, I want you to stick with me, because I'm really excited about it, and I think that it's got a lot of fun role-playing power to it. It's called Retrocognition, and this one does come from my Harrow bloodline, and I'll just read you the description. So, opening my mind to mental echoes, I gain impressions from past events that occurred in our current location. Retrocognition reveals psychic impressions from events that occurred over the course of the last day throughout the first minute of the duration of the spell, followed by impressions from the next day for the next minute, and so on. These echoes don't play out like a vision, but instead reveal impressions of emotions and metaphors that provide cryptic clues and details of the past. If you witness a traumatic or turbulent event through an impression, the spell ends unless you succeed as a will save with a DC of at least 30 and possibly as much as 50, depending on the severity of the event. So, yeah, pretty intense. The GM determines whether the event is whether an event is traumatic and chooses the DC.
So are you telling me that you have a spell that turns you into Deanna Troi?
Yes, exactly that. Exactly that.
Even more obscure revelations for Craig to prep every single time.
I will do my utmost to let you know when I'm going to do it, so we can have a quick drink break so Craig can determine what he's going to say. But just think about the situation of, like, when we were going to see the hag and we were trying to make that decision about, you know, do we ignore the footsteps in the ground?
Exactly what I thought.
We go back? Or we're trying to figure out, you know, what the marks on the stone were. This would have been a really cool spell to have in that moment, because those cryptic clues could have given us the an idea of, okay, they left because they were frustrated because they couldn't get in, rather than, you know, they left, I don't know, with evil intent because they're hiding in the bushes around the corner. Yeah, that kind of thing. So I just thought, really exciting. I don't get a choice of that spell because it's part of the bloodline, but as I've kind of said all the way through, I've really enjoyed the Harrow spells and how they've built all of that. So I think it's very, very cool. I will tell you about another spell that I have, mainly because it's very exciting. It's called Telekinetic Bombardment. This allows me to grasp a piece of the landscape, such as a tree, a carriage, or a piece of masonry, and lob it in my foe's direction. The missile crashes down in either a 10-foot burst or a 30-foot line, for example, if you're pulling down a tree or a ship's mast, and it deals 14d6 bludgeoning damage and turns the area into difficult terrain as it breaks into rubble. So, yeah, I just thought, oh,
I'm too inspired by that giant throwing the guy.
I want to do that. Yeah, exactly. So very excited about that. There is a third one as well, which I will hold on to until the moment comes, because very excited about that as well. But I forgot to say about my ancestry feats, because level 13, Aaron also gets his ancestry feat. I've chosen the Irasini Ice Witch feat. So this builds upon my Winter Touched Human feat, which Aaron took early on. As we know from his flashbacks, he's from the Stormspear Mountains, the lands of the Lenorm Kings and all of that kind of areas, which is why he's so pale and got his white hair. And basically, this traces his descent from the bloodlines of the Queens of Irasen, and they're part of like the Baba Yaga clans. So he has a resistance to cold of 11 now. And I can also cast Wall of Ice as an innate arcane spell. So yeah, very, very cool. Very excited to get Aaron back on the field and test it out. And I will say as well, just from looking around the remaster of the Foundry system, the interface I'm really liking. It looks improved, really easy to navigate. So yeah, thoroughly enjoying all of that. It's been a pleasure. Okay, thanks, boys. I think that is everything on the level up. Really excited to see what the level 13 players look like when we're back in play. So thank you very, very much. And then just to kind of come towards the end of this, Craig has indicated a few questions around kind of how we feel the adventure's going so far. And specifically, have we got any predictions or thoughts about what's going to happen next? I'll jump in straight away and say, I don't have a clue. I'm really, especially because of what's happened with the portals all being completed, I've not got the foggiest idea of what's going to come next or any kind of indications or ideas. Has anyone had any conspiracy theories or harebrained ideas that they'd like to vocalize here? We're all starting a sweepstakes.
From my point of view, I'm a lot like you, mate. I don't really know where we're going next. I don't feel like anything has been sort of explicitly sort of teased, or there's anything. If there are breadcrumbs leading to what's coming next, I've certainly missed them. The only thing I'm sort of looking at a little bit is the paladin card, summoning those paladins. That feels like something you're only going to need if there's going to be some sort of conflict.
Yeah, so this epitomizing them in the Harrow Court, wasn't it? It summoned a bunch of paladin soldiers to essentially defend Harrow Heart.
Yeah, that's the only thread I've seen so far that doesn't really seem to have anything that ties it off, as it were. You know, all the other cards seem to have a more immediate benefit. It's like, hey, they give you this thing, you can go here and do that thing. The paladin is the only one I've sort of looked at so far and gone, well, the other epitomize, I think I can re-roll a save or something like that, but the actual epitomizing itself is like, well, that doesn't do anything right now, so I'm guessing that's to come. But if that's coming next, it's going to be coming out of the blue rather than me going, yeah, I think that's next up.
Yeah, so don't really have any ideas what is going to happen. All I know is that I'm about 90 99% sure that Clive is going to have something to do with it.
Gets the big bad.
The streak of episodes with
it's
Clive.
Come back round.
Streak of episodes where Clive gets a mention carries on.
Yeah, I mean, we've got all these cards. All of those people that are coming after us are dead. Am I right with that?
Well, they're not all have decided dead. Not to come.
No, because we've got Squeaky the Imp or whatever his name is. I don't.
We know that Varnev the Butcher is dead, but we know that there is. Yeah, we've got some leads to investigate. So I've got an idea of where we'll go next to try and maybe pull on the thread of some of those leads, but how that's going to link in with Harrowheart is still a bit of a mystery. And I think the thing that dawned on me the other day was just, yeah, we found loads of cards, but there's still so many more, assuming that they're all artifacts of this kind of power and potency for the full Harrow deck, which I'm guessing there is. Yeah. But there's still so many more to find, and that's, again, hugely exciting.
But do we know that there's so many to find, or is it that...
I'm working on the basis that, yeah, there are more cards to find out there, and we'll build that full deck, the deck of destiny. We've currently got 12 cards, and there is a total of 54, I think, I want to say.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you, Craig. 54. So, yeah, loads more to find, presumably, and I'm really excited to do it, and hopefully we can keep our characters long enough alive. Hopefully we can keep our characters alive long enough to see this adventure through to the end.
I mean, your character's now got a 32 AC, so...
Respect. And if he dies, thank chance. You very much.
Yes, absolutely. And if he dies, Malachi can Dr. Frankenstein him back to life. So
exactly. And he's got the legendary fighter Wilhelm, who has pledged his life to Aeron. So I'm sure that no ill fate could possibly befall him. Well, thank you very much, everybody, for listening. I know that this is a bit of a departure from our usual broadcasts, but we're really looking forward to seeing you again next week, hopefully, if Craig's voice is back on form. Huge apologies that we couldn't bring you an episode this week, but just the nature of losing our GM's vocal prowess means that, unfortunately, we've just got to take a bit of a breather. But I feel that it has come at just the right time with the level up and the remaster to be able to just take a pause, get everybody on the same page. And I really hope that even though it's a little bit different, you've still enjoyed listening to this. So yeah, we're very excited to be back next week, where we will start the final chapter of book one of Stolen Fate. And while there isn't really a huge cliffhanger that we can bring the curtain down on, I will just tease that we do have a very exciting announcement. Yes, that's right. An announcement about an announcement to share with you very soon. Oh, mystery. Ooh. Thanks so much for listening, guys. And the count comes down. Yeah. See you next week.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
Sire.
Bye.
You've been listening to Describe Your Kill, The Death of Destiny. Find out more at describeyourkill.com. Thank you to Paizo, Michael Gelfi, Creator Chord, Sirenscape, Kevin McLeod, Foundry, and Sigil Services. Get all the links on our website. This podcast uses trademarks and or copyrights owned by Paizo Inc. used under Paizo's community use policy. We are expressly prohibited from charging you to use or access this content. This podcast is not published, endorsed, or specifically approved by Paizo. For more information about Paizo Inc. and Paizo products, visit paizo.com.